At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Storms and conventions and stories, oh my. What's that about August being a slow news month? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Monday, the 27th of August. Good as always to have you with us. If it seems like all the news today is news you've kind of heard before, well, you have. Another 4 years, another national political convention, another 7 years, another possible hurricane headed toward New Orleans. We'll have the economics of political conventions tomorrow when the festivities down in Tampa Bay really get going, though. Today, we begin with Tropical Storm Isaac. It is expected to hit the Crescent City later this week, Wednesday, last I heard. We've called Sal Sunseri to see how things are going down there. He's an oysterman from way back. He runs P&J Oysters down in New Orleans. We've had him on a couple of times before. Sal, it's good to talk to you again.
Appreciate you always thinking about us.
Well, this is the fourth time in 6-7 years we've had you on the program because you guys, you keep getting whacked.
We're going to just keep going. We're resilient down here.
How ready can you be for something like this?
We have a generator, so we do have backup this time around.
Mm-hmm.
We are pulling in oysters today, and of course, oysters last a couple of weeks, so we'll be fine because the restaurants are going to want to keep going.
Do people stock up in advance of one of these storms? I mean, are the restaurants coming to you and saying,
yes,
I got to lay in a supply?
Yes. Yes, they do. This type of storm.
Yeah. Are you back yet from the BP oil spill? I mean, have you come all the way back?
Well, we're getting back up there. It's a good 75%. I mean, that's not bad. And it's sort of like a comparison with a forest fire, to where it's gone, but it comes back strong. Production is not nearly where it should be at this point. But we operate at lean, mean, and fighting machine type of place. You know, small family business. And our restaurants are loyal. You know, yeah, the people that we've dealt with forever. So,
do you get any sense that not New Orleanians, but the tourists are a little bit gun-shy, maybe?
You know, going into end of August, September, there's not as much bookings.
Yeah.
But that's typical. This particular year has been pretty strong, very strong.
Huh.
So hopefully people just realize that this time of year something could happen. But, you know, chances are, huh? It's not going to be happening much more. Come on.
Well, that's totally fair. So this is obviously the news of the day, and it's sort of taking away from the big political story, the conventions down in Tampa. Are you paying attention to any of that stuff down there in Tampa, the convention?
Well, sure, but I heard that the storm's not going that way, so I don't know why they pushed it back or it's a shorter version. But, I'd hold it. I think it should be going on.
What about you and your house and your family and all that? You're just going to ride this thing out, I guess, right? Boarding up the windows?
This time. We have a small generator just to run, you know, the refrigerator and a few fans. And we're going to be cooking some etouffee and have some raw oysters.
Sounds good, man. Sounds good. Sal Sunseri at P&J Oysters down in New Orleans. It's a 130-year-old oyster company.
136.
Thanks a lot, Sal. Take it easy.
Thanks for having me.
Sal's staying where he is, as are, one might imagine, a whole lot of others in New Orleans, at least until Isaac gets any bigger. Marketplace's Eve Troe has more now on how businesses in town are handling the hunker-down shoppers.
The official plan for the city of New Orleans is to shelter in place. That means people are shopping for a few days at home without power or water. At Conseco's Market, manager Earl LaCour says, as always, the most in-demand item is bottled water.
Our shelf is full, but everything that we had in the back this morning is gone.
Stores do carry more water since Katrina, but he can't order extra this close to a storm. There's still plenty of cold cuts and bread, plus an infamous homemade dip called Thunder Cheese.
Roberto, we still got Thunder Cheese?
Thunder Cheese we still got.
He'll decide at 5 a.m. tomorrow whether to board up or open. David Blazak's store, Mary's Ace Hardware in the French Quarter, is already sold out of generators and D batteries. And they're almost out of
flashlights, lanterns, tarps, gas cans.
He thinks the focus has been on evacuation since Katrina, hence all the last-minute need for basics. Blazak got his last shipment on Friday. But big retailers like Home Depot and Walmart still have trucks coming in, at least until winds hit tropical storm level. Doug Spiron runs the emergency command center that Home Depot's pulled together in Atlanta.
Surrounded by, about 200 of my best friends from supply chain logistics all the way to our HR people.
The company overstocked New Orleans stores last week with plywood, radios, and bottled water. It already has trucks waiting just outside the storm zone, loaded with after-storm needs, cleaning supplies, chainsaws, and, of course, bottled water. I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, not a hint of the turmoil going on down in the Gulf of Mexico. Barely a hint of a pulse among traders. In fact, details when we do the numbers. You ever been someplace on vacation, summer vacation in particular, and struck up a conversation with a local, only to find out they're not really a local at all? In a lot of places, guest workers from other countries staff the hotels and the local drugstores, even the shoe stores. Turns out Wall, South Dakota, outsources a lot of its summer jobs. So we asked South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Charles Michael Ray to take a road trip there.
Wall, South Dakota, is a dusty little western town. It sits near the border of the Badlands National Park. With a population of about 800 people, Wall is the last place you might think of as cosmopolitan. But you'd be wrong. In Wall, you can buy a pair of boots from a Czech.
Fancy cowboy stylish boots for rodeo or riding horse.
You can pick up a souvenir t-shirt from a Kurd.
It's not really hard work, so I can handle it.
And if you want fries with that, a Hungarian is happy to oblige.
Most of the time I'm at the window, so I call the numbers.
197. Thank you, sir.
Jacob Lysek, Edzilia Kanimatova, and Aniko Tote are in the United States for the summer on foreign guest worker visas. They're employed at Wall Drug. You can find everything here from a $1,000 pair of cowboy boots to a nickel cup of coffee. Mike Heather is the general manager. This summer, Heather brought in workers from 19 different countries.
90% of them have two jobs here in Wall. There's motels, there's a local restaurants also. And this one chance at making some money for their college and getting better English, you know, they got to get it while they can.
Those like Aniko Tote from Hungary say foreign workers here get a chance to hone their English skills, not just with American customers, but also with fellow workers from around the world.
I always had to make my roommate repeat what she says, and especially because she's from England, so her accent is a bit strange.
Tote and others here seem happy at Wall Drug, but it's not so good elsewhere. This summer, the U.S. Department of Labor fined 5 South Dakota businesses for shortchanging workers on overtime and for failing to pay minimum wage. The businesses were also forced to pay $124,000 in back pay. The Labor Department says foreign guest workers are vulnerable, and there is clear evidence of this in South Dakota. In the town of Rapid City, a number of hotels and businesses employ foreign guest workers, mostly as housekeepers and food service personnel. And their accommodations aren't always so nice.
You can see that it's pretty, you know, disgusting place to live.
Anastasia Loza is a student from the Ukraine. She's one of 17 people who pay $150 per month each to live in this 4-bedroom house. Yeah, that's 17 people in 4 bedrooms. Bunk beds are stacked on top of one another, and there's 2 big open sacks of garbage piled up in a kitchen corner. Loza says she and the others here work 6 days a week, often at 2 jobs.
no one cleans, just too many people, two bathrooms.
Absolutely not do we exploit these kids.
James Henderson is the CEO of the Adobe Eco Hotel. Its parent company, Shiba Investments, is among those recently fined.
These students are educated, they're smart, they're wonderful people, and we treat them with respect and treat them under American law.
Henderson says federal officials also inquired about the living conditions and found no problems. It's not clear, though, if this hotel is violating city law. Local occupancy codes allow for only 5 people who aren't related by birth or marriage to rent the same house. But local officials also say they can't investigate the Adobe Eco Hotel's worker housing without a written complaint. Back in the kitchen of her temporary home, Anastasia Loza says she has complained about the living conditions and work situation with her sponsors. But Loza says she dropped the complaints because she's due back home in the Ukraine soon. She won't be coming back next year. In Rapid City, South Dakota, I'm Charles Michael Ray for Marketplace.
More people work as teachers in this country than work in any other profession, but the ranks are thinning. More than 300,000 education jobs have disappeared since the recession officially ended. That's according to the White House. And for a lot of teachers, that springtime pink slip has become something of an annual cliffhanger. Linnea West teaches language arts at a Spanish immersion school in Eden Prairie, Minnesota.
This spring was my second time being laid off. Our district had to lay off 25 tenured teachers, and I was told you basically have no chance of coming back to our school district in the fall. I was really devastated for a couple of weeks. I just kind of wandered around in a fog, like, how am I going to have a career without teaching? I didn't really know what that would look like. And then it kind of opened up the door for me, really, to start looking around. I just started sending my new revamped resume around to people and signing up for conferences and networking. So the last week of school, my principal said, there's been a position allotted to us, and we are going to hire you back. I was grateful, and then I thought, well, all that drama just to be called back into the same position, but I am going to, you know, go back for this at least one more year I have, and then it looks like next spring there'll be more budget cuts on the horizon. Of course, it's not a guarantee that I'm going to be laid off again next spring, but it's looking pretty good. I've got a little notebook I'm keeping all of my new adventure options in. And I've got a different page for all of my brainstorming activities. I had a page of, oh, here's going to be my new tutoring business. Here is going to be my PhD program. Then here is my other options, like, oh, what if I worked for Apple and I trained teachers on how to use iPads? And I could do that.
Marketplace's Amy Scott produced that profile for us. We're going to be hearing from more teachers in the coming weeks in a series that Amy's working on. Coming up.
We just throw it out, or it goes down the drain and it's gone. And so we don't tend to think about the impact that it might have, the money that we are squandering.
Our series, Food for 9 Billion, continues, and how much food we waste today. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials moved just 0.25% lower today, 33 points, 13,124 at the bell. The NASDAQ edged up 0.1%. It gained 3 points, finished at 3,073. The S&P 500, well, we'll call that flat. Shaved off less than a point, finished right back where it started the day, 14.10. The quietest day of the year so far on the New York and NASDAQ stock exchanges, with the lowest trading volume for all of 2012. Apple got a 2% bounce from last week's sweeping legal victory over Samsung, and the stock rose to another all-time high, $675 a share. That's only one share, by the way, $675. Samsung dropped almost 7.5% today in value on the South Korean stock market. Bond prices rose. That pushed the yield on the 10-year T-note down to 1.65%. I know I've said this before, but you go away for a week, nothing changes. You're listening to Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. How are you feeling about the economy? The Conference Board releases its monthly Consumer Confidence Index. Those into self-expression as well as self-reliance are gathered in the Nevada desert for the annual Burning Man Festival. And on August 28, 1963, Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his famous I Have a Dream speech on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Once you get past the headline news of the day, the weather forecast in New Orleans and the GOP doings down in Tampa Bay, there is some not small corporate news to pass on. Next time you're out looking for a rental car, your choice of company will have narrowed a bit. Hertz, we learned today, is going to spend $2 billion, $2.3 billion, to be a bit more specific, to buy Dollar Thrifty. Sabri Benishour has that story.
You might imagine that the whole point of consolidation is to save money. Economies of scale, sharing one name, facilities, offices. But that's really not why Hertz is doing this. I mean, sure, they say they'll save money, $160 million. Chris Brown is editor of Auto Rental News.
The consolidation and the savings come in the back office. They'll be able to share fleet. Hertz has collectively more buying power with the auto manufacturers.
But maintaining separate brands is the whole point of this takeover. Neil Abrams is a consultant. He's been in the business 36 years.
Well, Hertz is a premium brand, most recognized as a leading brand to the corporate community.
Dollar Thrifty is how Hertz will get more access and compete in the discount car rental scene and reach value-oriented customers.
Millions of other rental customers that they otherwise would not have access to.
All the other big car companies do this. They have their high-end brands, Enterprise, Avis, that focus on, say, business clients, and they also have their own lower-tier brands like Budget or Alamo. Chris Brown.
You still have the same number of brands, and they're all going to be competing against each other.
Still, with this takeover, you'll have three companies controlling 95% of a $23 billion industry. That's more than enough to tip off the spidey sense of antitrust regulators. So to help the deal survive, Hertz is selling off its Discount Advantage brand. The thinking is, if everything goes according to plan, consumers shouldn't notice much of anything. I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
The other shoe dropped today in that Apple-Samsung lawsuit that was decided Friday afternoon, the one where a jury in San Jose said Samsung violated Apple's patents to the tune of a $1 billion penalty. Apple now wants a handful of Samsung models, eight to be exact, pulled off shelves and banned in this country. More to come on that, to be sure. You probably know plenty about Apple, about its phones and its founder and how the company's fans feel about it. But what do you know about Samsung and how Koreans feel about it? Marketplace's Queen of Kim has that story.
Koreans don't necessarily feel that the ruling was unfair. They just think it was predictable. The logic goes, if you ask jurors from Silicon Valley to decide a case involving a legendary American company that also happens to employ a lot of people in your town, of course the jury's going to hand the home team a victory. But that's not all.
The first thing you need to understand is that in Korea, a lot of people equate Samsung with national pride.
Nathan McMurray is a corporate attorney at Baden Law, a Korean law firm in Seoul. He says after the Korean War, the country was one of the poorest in the world, and so it invested heavily in family-run businesses like Samsung.
The fact that we have a company that's the biggest electronics company in the world that came out of this environment is really a miracle.
So the generation of Koreans who remember the war have a strong emotional reaction to the verdict. Haejung Kim is a reporter at Radio Korea in L.A., which has the largest Korean community outside of Korea.
Old people think it's shame on Samsung.
What she means is that Samsung was shamed. Even at the age of 30, Kim still feels the pull of nationalism. She says Samsung must appeal, not because of the billion-dollar verdict, but to clear its name.
Yes, Korean name too, because Samsung is on behalf of Korea.
You still feel a pull for Korea in Samsung?
Yes. Because, you know, that's my country.
I'm Queen of Kim for Marketplace.
The United Nations says by the middle of this century, there are going to be 9 billion people living on this planet. That not-so-simple fact raises a whole lot of questions, not the least of which is how we're going to feed them all. How are we going to get, as our series this year has been asking, food for 9 billion? Grow more is the obvious answer, but maybe we'd need to produce less food if we didn't waste so much of what we have. So today, two stories of food waste, the extremes of it. In a minute, Marketplace's Adrian Hill here in California. First, though, Jory Lewis. She's with cattle herders, nomads, in Senegal.
When I ask Hominou Seydou Ba how many cows he has, he says around 70. But I know to multiply that number by 3 because Fulani cattle herders are notoriously secretive about the numbers. Cows are more than just farm animals here. They are the herder's wealth. Ba's compound is far from the main road, and even from a back road. My driver followed a dusty, twisty trail I wouldn't have known was there. When we arrived, a small child brought me a bowl of lightly sweetened milk to drink. The herders use the milk their cows produce. The women make some into butter and some into lait caillé, a kind of soured milk, what the child brought me. But there's often too much. And they can't give it to their neighbors because neighboring herders have their own milk. The same thing holds true at the nearest weekly market. Everyone has milk. And most people in cities, if they drink milk, use powdered milk imported from Europe.
When there's a lot of milk, we don't know what to do with it all. Eventually, we have to throw it out.
Jibby Jaw is an expert on the milk sector at Senegal's Agricultural Research Institute. He says 30% of the herders' milk gets thrown out. In regions with a lot of herders, that number can be 80%. Jibby Jaw says the problem is simple.
They're far from the big urban centers, which are the main markets for the milk. And in order to move the milk from the country to Dakar, we have to have infrastructure and refrigerated trucks, which cost a lot of money.
Or do what La Laiterie de Berger did in 2006, bring a yogurt factory to the herders. For the Fulani, the yogurt factory is a new source of income to support their traditional life. Hamadou Seydou Ba was the very first herder to jump on board with La Laiterie de Berger.
It can help us. The milk that you used to throw out, now you can sell it and have money to support your family and to buy other food.
He does complain that La Laiterie de Berger hasn't raised the price it pays to herders. In this drought year, he had to send half his family off with most of the cattle to find new grazing land, keeping only about a dozen cows here. Buying enough feed for just those animals is already too expensive. But the drought hurts the yogurt factory, too. When so many of its milk producers are nomads who pick up and migrate, it doesn't have enough milk. In Senegal, I'm Jory Lewis for Marketplace.
We obviously don't have a lot of the problems here that the Senegalese do. We've got good roads, good electricity and refrigeration, and our farmers generally stay in one place. But still, we end up wasting a whole lot of food, as Marketplace's Adrian Hill explains.
Dairy farmer Brad Scott takes me around his 1,000-cow farm, where the cows are pretty much doing what it is cows do.
Now, you know, some are resting.
Some are eating.
Some they're just hanging at the water trough.
There's a little mooing.
Just enjoying a nice day.
Their only job, milk, twice a day.
So this is what we call the milking parlor.
One of Scott's workers tugs at each teat to check the milk. And these squirts are pretty much all the milk that Scott will toss, and maybe a little that sticks to the walls of the milk tank.
Other than that, there's no waste from the time it leaves the udder until it gets to the consumer.
Here in the U.S., cows and dairy farmers aren't our food waste problem. Our problem is us. The Department of Agriculture estimates we waste about 30% of our milk supply at restaurants and at home. We also waste that much or more of our total food supply, a lot without noticing it.
It tends to just go away.
Jonathan Bloom is the author of American Wasteland. Where does it disappear to? Here's a clue.
We just throw it out or it goes down the drain and it's gone. And so we don't tend to think about the impact that it might have, the money that we are squandering through the food we're wasting.
We don't worry too much about tossing the yogurt that's been sitting a little too long or the abandoned green beans that got a little gooey because they weren't that expensive in the first place.
Despite rising food prices, the amount of our – or the percentage of our household spending that goes toward food is at an all-time low, and no other nation in the world spends as little on its food.
In the U.S., we waste more fruits and vegetables than any other food group. Milk takes silver in the most wasted category. And if you really want to see milk spilling in action,
let's go look at the trash.
Schools are a great place to start.
This one's pretty heavy.
I visit an elementary school in Ojai, California, and meet sixth grade teacher Janice Duncan.
Yes, I've dug through a lot of trash.
She's monitored the trash here for 5 years, discovering whole chicken breasts, apples that were too big for kids to bite into, unopened cartons of milk, and...
a lot of yucky stuff, too. Yes, a lot of chewed food. When you have it all mashed together, it looks pretty...
I think gross is the word. But the amount of trashed food has been declining here. There's a partnership between the school and a local nonprofit called Food for Thought to get kids to think more about food waste. They sort their garbage.
Does the food go here?
Yes.
The cafeteria staff reminds kids not to take too much. They have a garden with a compost pile. There's a sharing table where kids drop unopened milk. And, says Duncan, they sometimes call on the bigger kids to help, giving sixth graders trash monitoring duties.
I put student leadership at that trash can and actually had kids make kids drink all their milk before they threw it away. Yeah, and that worked.
But kids aren't the only offenders. A lot of us do the same. Milk spoils in the fridge. We pour it in coffee that we don't drink. We forget it in the hot car. According to a USDA calculation, we toss the equivalent of about a third a glass of milk per person per day. Which, if I do a little math here, 310 million people, ounces into gallons, gallons into pounds of milk, how much milk cows produce. That's about 800,000 cows worth of milk down the drain. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
Our series, Food for 9 Billion, is a collaboration with Homelands Productions, the Center for Investigative Reporting, and PBS NewsHour. The rest of the stories in the series and pictures from this one are online, marketplace.org.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, my nod to the passing of Neil Armstrong, since I'm kind of a space geek. There is nothing especially marketplace-y about a 43-year-old moon mission, except for this. I read today that Armstrong and all the other Apollo astronauts got per diem during their trips to the moon, $8 a day, $8 a day, minus a deduction for accommodations since they had the spacecraft to stay in, which you just got to love. All right, we got to go. That's Marketplace from APM. Today, the Dow slipped 33 points, a quarter of 1%. The NASDAQ up 3 points, a tenth of 1%. The S&P 500 finished basically flat, shaved off less than a single point. Our producers include Bridget Bodner, Millie Jefferson, John Ketchum, Megan Larson, Liza Madry, and Jolie Podokas. I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.